Welcome to On the Middle East, Al Monitor's podcast on the big and interesting developments in the region. My name is Amran Zaman, and today I'll be talking with Ann Linde, who served as Sweden's foreign minister for 7 years until September 2022. Her Social Democratic Party was in power in March 2022 when Sweden and its neighbour Finland applied for full membership of NATO in response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine that year. Both countries fully expected to join NATO without any hitches, until Turkey, one of the alliance's most important members, slammed the brakes. Ankara insisted Sweden and Finland needed to drastically alter their permissive approach to the Kurdistan Workers' Party, or PKK, and other anti-Turkish groups as a condition for approving their membership. Ankara was particularly incensed by Linde's warm embrace of representatives of the Kurdish-led autonomous administration in northeast Syria. Turkey says they are part of the PKK, which is formally designated as a terrorist group by the United States and the European Union. In March last year, Finland got the green light, and in January, after 9 months of haggling, the Turkish parliament gave the final go-ahead for Sweden's membership as well. But at what cost to Sweden and its much-vaunted prioritization of human rights? Sweden's former top diplomat responds. Welcome to our programme, Ann Linde. It's wonderful to have you with us here today.
Thank you very much.
So it's a very important time, well, for the world, but also for your country, Sweden, which is still trying to join the NATO alliance and being held up by Hungary, but for a very long time was held up by Turkey. As you well know, Turkey had some very big demands of Sweden. And of course, now that Turkey has finally approved Sweden's membership, it seems like it's a good time to reflect on that whole process. Was Turkey ever really serious in its demands? Was it about something else, about the US and F-16s? Or was it serious, as I said? And what did Sweden do? And how has Sweden changed in this process? And how do you feel that the government, the current government, handled it?
Well, thank you very much. I think the first thing to reflect on is why Sweden decided to change the security policy that has been very successful for more than 200 years, keeping Sweden out of war. We were neutral, we were military non-aligned, and then suddenly we changed. And why did we? Well, the easy answer is the terrible situation when Russia, so close to Sweden, decided to invade a neighboring country, Ukraine, who has done absolutely nothing. And we had for a long time been very aware of that an attack on Sweden is not something you can count out, not as a main target, but being drawn into a war in our vicinity. And then Finland, who Sweden and Finland had a deepening defense cooperation. Finland had a 1,340 kilometer long direct border to Russia. And they were already in 1939 and then a little bit, a few years later, two times invaded by Russia. And they even lost territory. So it's just a few generations. They still are people who remember that from their own families. And that meant that Finland, who had had more or less the same position as Sweden, we should be military non-aligned with a strong cooperation together. They changed the view very quickly. And that meant that if Sweden were to be alone, around the Baltic Sea, that would be a situation that would not be the best way to keep the Swedish people safe. It was not an easy decision for Sweden to take, and not for my own party, which is the biggest party in Sweden, the Social Democratic Party, which have had it, some even call it an identity to be non-aligned. And now we had to have big discussions. Okay, so after this discussion in our party, discussion in the Swedish parliament, and we came to the conclusion that yes, this is the best way. Then we decided in May, after a discussion in the parliament, after this report was put forward to the parliament, that we should sign an application for NATO. And I signed it the 17th of May in 2022. What happened then was that we, in quite a short time, got the information after we have had talked with all parties before, that everybody would welcome Sweden. There was an open door policy in NATO. I talked personally to the foreign minister, Çavuşoğlu. The Finnish president talked with Erdogan. Both of them assured Sweden and Finland that we would be welcomed because we would strengthen NATO as an alliance for security, because both Sweden and Finland has very strong defense forces. And we of course, have a lot of know-how when it comes to Baltic Sea and the very north and so on. So we felt that we have made sure that we were welcome, and NATO as such welcomed us. Then what happened was that Turkey changed their mind. And when it was the summit in Madrid, before the summit, they were supposed to take a decision to invite Sweden and Finland to become, it's called invitee. And that means that if you are invited by all NATO members as invitee, everything opens up.
Why do you think Turkey changed its mind, having offered those assurances and then, you know?
Yeah, I think there are, of course, different, because the same weekend as the Swedish parliament was going to have the discussion, and then I was going to sign the application, the same weekend, suddenly Erdogan said, well, I'm not sure that we will welcome them. And that was, this was not what we expected, because he had said to President of Finland that we were welcome. The foreign minister has said that we were welcome. And so we thought that we have had those discussions. The main reason that Turkey said was that Sweden is not tough enough to fight terrorism, and that we allowed PKK on our soil. The fact is that Sweden, like EU, consider PKK to be a terrorist organization. But Turkey has for many, many years wanted NATO to put the fight against terrorism much higher on NATO's agenda. That has been a policy that Turkey has pursued for many, many years. And I think that now they, both for some legitimate reason, it turned out that there had been quite some financing to PKK from Sweden that we started to to do something about after this. And then, of course, I don't want to speculate, but, you know, everybody knows about the issue of F-16 and so on and so forth. But
could you explain a bit about that financing? Because obviously this happened under your watch that you established that this was going.
It came out, and that was very clear that that had been financing originating from Sweden to PKK persons. And we had not taken that seriously enough because it was not a threat to Sweden. But then our intelligence and security police found out that this was in fact true. And we also, and that was not as a result of the discussions with Turkey, but we have already started to tighten our terrorist laws. So we decided in this memorandum we had to write that the any act of financing and recruitment of PKK activities should be fought. And then the question came, okay, so Turkey is on their way to change their mind. What should we do? And NATO's leadership and the big countries told us that, okay, it seems like we have a real problem that none of us had foreseen, because NATO has an open door policy and you fulfill all the criteria. But anyway, we have a problem and we need to address that problem. And you have to make an agreement with Turkey before the summit. Otherwise, they will not accept you to become an invitee. And that some people have said, why didn't you let NATO negotiate? Why didn't you leave it? Well, the thing is that we had come to the conclusion that we needed NATO membership for our security. And if and that was, of course, our prime goal. If then NATO and the big country says that this is needed to have an agreement with Turkey, and you and Finland has to agree with them. So it started a diplomatic activities on a big scale. In the end, as it's always, I've been minister for nearly 7 years, so I know it's these things happen. You negotiate until the absolute deadline, and the diplomats and NATO, with the help of NATO in the three countries, came very close to an agreement, but not 100% close. So we had to have a final agreement, final negotiation in Madrid at the summit, and we were sitting there for 5 hours with our prime minister, myself, and our NATO ambassador, and president of Finland, foreign minister of Finland, and president Erdogan, and foreign minister Çavuşoğlu. And after 5 hours, we agreed to a memorandum of understanding. And then Turkey and Hungary, as well as all other NATO countries, decided that we were now going to be invitee. And that was then sealed at North Atlantic Council meeting 5th of July, where all countries, including Turkey and Hungary, wrote on the agreement. And by that, the NATO process was finished and the ratification started.
Yes, but I mean, Turkey had these demands that we talked about, and some of them were rather outlandish, to be frank. I mean, the demanding the extradition of people like Ragıp Zarakoğlu and others who have never carried any weapons in their lives, who've been acknowledged as, legitimate asylum seekers by your government in the past, and particularly bearing in mind, as you said at a conference in 2019 at this Rojava Gala, that human rights has always stood at the fore of your foreign policy. How do you feel Sweden has come out of this process? I mean, do you feel that that's now been lost and that thanks to pressure from Turkey in part, or bearing in mind the broader context that you very kindly provided for us, do you feel that Sweden has changed fundamentally as a country? And again, I repeat the question, do you feel that your successor government handled this well, and your own as well, obviously? But where do you think you are today as a country?
We have changed fundamentally when it comes to our security policy. I mean, 200 years of neutrality and military non-alignment has changed to being a NATO member. And that's a fundamental change of the security policy. When it comes to human rights and international law and democracy, there has been no change. And there was no decision on extradition or things like that. In the memorandum, it's said that we will address the question of extradition, but in accordance with the European Convention of Extradition and following the international law. And that's what we've done. And I know that during the whole process, the President Erdogan said, now we are going to get 33 people from Sweden and then 73 people. And so it was nothing in the negotiation about this. And that was nothing that happened. Everything happened in accordance with the European Convention on Extradition and in accordance with international law.
Okay, so then what did Sweden actually do to address Turkey's concerns in concrete terms? You mentioned terrorism financing. There's been a lot of talk about this anti-terror legislation, which in fact long predated your NATO application and therefore was not prompted by Turkish pressure in any way. So what did Turkey get from Sweden?
Well, one thing is that after the military intervention in northeast Syria, which I also protested against in Ankara, then we had never a weapon embargo because that's a decision by EU, and EU didn't take that decision, even if Sweden was in favor of that. But we have a tightening of the possibility for weapon sales to Turkey after this. And in the memorandum, we agreed that we cannot be member of a military alliance and not treat all the members of the military alliance the same way. So that was one concrete change, of course, the question of military export.
Were there any military exports to speak of, though, to Turkey?
No, but still important. It's still important.
Okay, so and this yes, sorry, go ahead.
And then, of course, we decided to have a closer relation between our intelligence services to give and take information. And one should know that Sweden have had for decades a cooperation because we have, as you might know, unfortunately, a big problem with criminal gangs. We also have several who is using Turkey to be, and so there has been a cooperation between the agencies for a very long time. But now we made that more formal. We started a mechanism that should meet regularly, a permanent joint mechanism with experts from ministries, foreign affairs, interior and justice, as well as the intelligence service and security institution. And we also said that this permanent joint mechanism will be open for other countries to join. And then, of course, it was the question that was a very, very difficult question on how we should relate to the Turkish parties that is considered terrorist parties by Turkey, but is not considered terrorist parties by Sweden, Finland, or EU for that matter. And that was one of the very, very difficult issues that we had to find a way that we could live with, both Turkey and Sweden and Finland.
You mean the YPG and people like Ilham Ahmed, who you hosted, and you thanked them for the fight against the terrorism. Do you
I had many, many meetings with Ilham Ahmed, both yes. for their work in the Syrian Democratic Council,
yes,
in Anes, their fight against IS. And of course, we had to meet many times because we had several women and children in northeast Syria in the camps. And actually, I had to send more than 8 delegations to northeast Syria from the ministry. And finally, we got home, the women and children. But for every time, we had to have a negotiation with the regional administration. And Ilham Ahmed was one of the leaders of Syrian Democratic Council and ANES, so it was perfectly normal that I should have all those contact with her. Okay. And I think also we had a very constructive, very good relation that I value a lot.
That relationship was a casualty of this process. And do you still maintain that administration, that the YPG, that the SDF are indeed good partners and they continue to partner with the United States and the coalition? Do you feel that that's been a casualty? Because as we all know, Ilham Ahmed and her colleagues can no longer visit you. I mean, well, I say you, I mean government officials. They may show up in Stockholm, but they don't get to have their pictures taken with Swedish officials anymore.
Well, actually, it happened that all those negotiations for the women and children were then ending more or less in the same time period. So there were no need for that anymore. And we never had contacts as a government with IPG. It was a party thing. And there was also meetings with the party and YPG during this time.
Well, I mean, you were a target of fierce criticism in the Turkish media. You were called a terrorist sympathizer, etc. What is your response to all of that? And if and when your party is re-elected, what sort of changes, if any, would you envisage in your policies towards Turkey and towards Kurds?
I'm not ashamed that I speak up for human rights, international law, and no military intervention. Absolutely not. And I've been asked several times. I mean, why did you say this in a press conference in Ankara? And why do you continue to stand up for human rights and international law? Why do you still say that Selahattin Demirtaş and Figen Yüksel and Osman Kavala should be freed? Well, that nothing of that has changed. What has changed is that we have made an agreement to the effect of national security of Turkey, Sweden and Finland will not provide support to YPG or PYDI. And that meant in economic, financial and military terms, which we hadn't done before either. But now it's on paper. that we wouldn't do that. And that is, of course, it was not on paper before. So this is, of course, this was a step that we had to agree on. But it's in the also very important to say in the paragraph about national security, not about terrorism.
And is that binding for every Swedish government that comes to power, or could it change?
No, actually, I mean, when Sweden signed an agreement, I don't think it ever have happened that that is not followed, because you should know that Sweden is a trustworthy country. And if you have a signed agreement, then you follow it. Of course, policies change and things like that, but signed agreement is followed.
So two final questions. One is, would you say that national security, given what's happening in the region at this time, trumps human rights for Sweden, that that's what you have to be vigilant about above all else for the security of your country, of your citizens?
Absolutely not.
You think the two are compatible still?
And that I think it's always very, very difficult, but that Sweden should not stand up for international law, human rights and democracy. That's not, as we say in Sweden, it's not on the map.
Okay, because, you know, this current government has been accused of sort of extraditing some people who didn't even have any clear, offense that could be qualified as terrorist activity just to placate Turkey, that somehow, you know, as one journalist put it to me, they were meat thrown at the Turkish government. I mean, that doesn't obviously fit the image we've all had of Sweden for decades, but you may want to comment on that or not. My final question is, do you think we could have gotten to where we did, meaning Turkey signing off finally, without the United States being involved in all of these discussions throughout? And when will Hungary follow suit?
Well, it seems like the issue of F-16 has played a role. Apparently, it seems like that. I cannot speculate because I don't know, but I mean, it seems like it has played a role. And when it comes to Hungary, I mean, the prime minister and foreign minister several times promised, both to me, to my successor, to the prime minister, both to our prime minister and this prime minister, they promised that Hungary will not be the last one to ratify. And now they are the last one. So this is, of course, not an ideal situation. I mean, we have fulfilled every criteria to become a member, and I think that they should just ratify us immediately.
Well, so all countries don't keep their promises like Sweden does. Thank you very much, Ann Linde. It was a great pleasure and an honor to have you on our program today.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Goodbye. And this brings us to the end of this week's episode of On the Middle East. I hope you found my conversation with Ann Linde as interesting as I did. Thanks for tuning in, and hope to be back soon with yet another brilliant guest. Thank you and goodbye.